Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion. Once again, live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. I want to thank everybody for joining us live as well as in the chat room. And, of course, everybody for listening on the podcast. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And once again, if it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, it's time for Subject to Discussion time. Once again, live on LVRocks.com and S2DRadio.com. In the chat room right now is Chris101940, Giorgio, myself, and Trencher. And LO Raptor just jumped in there. So thank you, everybody in the chat room. And that was the producer, Mr. Consoler. Thank you very much, who performed some little technical wizardry. And everything's up and running again. Very good. We appreciate that very much. And after the news and comment, we'll be joined by Miss Carol Barbie. She's the executive producer of CBS's smash hit, Jericho. You know, everybody knows that now. It's my favorite TV show. And she'll be joining us, hopefully, in a few minutes. And we'll talk about the series, where it's going, and kind of the ins and outs of, you know, of course, the news that was picked up last week for a full season now. So originally it's picked up for 13 episodes. Now the network, CBS, gave them the order for the back nine, as they say in the business. Now they'll have a full season of 22 episodes, and we'll see where they're going and everything else. Last week's episode was outstanding, and this week's looks like it's outstanding as well. They're building up. This week's episode is a federal response, and it'll be on Wednesday here in Las Vegas. It's on 8 o'clock Pacific time. So, and then in the second hour, we'll be joined first off by Mad Professor, the crazy professor of subject discussion, Mr. Koenig Rules, and he'll talk about Battlestar Galactica and the latest in Doctor Who. And then after him will be the mad rocket scientist of the program, Dr. Net Ranger from MediaBoulevard.com and Media Boulevard Magazine. Dr. Net Ranger's birthday, so we kind of switched him and Koenig around a little bit, so give him some more time to get back home and prepare for the program tonight. And once again, in a few minutes, we'll be joined by Miss Carol Barbie. She's the one of the executive producers of Jericho. So, and yeah, of course, I want to thank everybody for joining us once again. The show program is also archived. If you're looking for the archives of the program, I have a lot of people asking. It's also over on SpankWagon.net, and SpankWagon's on every Friday as well. So, and before we get to the news and comments, I'm going to go through the local. What's going on here in the, there's Koenig's in the chat room, the Mad Professor, in the Las Vegas Review Journal. They talk about, on the right-hand side, by Harry Reid, Pinky, as we call him out here, and his expenses are being questioned over some land deal. I've said before, everybody knows, I really don't care for him at all, so I kind of wish the Republicans would use this to bash him over the head and run him out. And what else? And China is showing some support for sanctions against North Korea. So that's in there. And Iraqi Prime Minister says the U.S. is undermining him. Interesting. And the vaunted underground war room is shutting down. This is a Cheyenne Mountain, of course, which is the basis for Stargate, the Stargate Command. So that's shutting down. And what else? Blah, blah, blah. And in the Nevada section, they talk about the Congressman Porter, John Porter. He's running for re-election against Tessa Hafen. And he's running these ridiculous commercials that she, her negative ads against him are false. I mean, he's been running these negative campaigns against her for months, saying that she's a carpetbagger, everything else. He must conveniently forgot that she's a third generation Nevadan. So, but of course, she's the one that's doing the negative campaigning. It just it's pathetic. And it says Porter spends big on television ads, so he's really slamming her. He's calling her political opportunist and all that stuff. Not good for too liberal for Nevada. Yada yada yada. And also I talk about a Veterans Center and Museum abandoned. Apparently, the Loudoun Veterans Center and Museum has been abandoned to make way for the expansion of the Las Vegas Convention Center. I mean, they made such a big deal out of this thing a couple of years ago, and now they're closing the thing up and letting the convention center take over the spot. I mean, it's Vegas for you. They have no concept of civic pride or landmarks, and not just bulldoze everything. Who cares? And in the Las Vegas Sun section, of course, remember the Las Vegas Sun used to be a separate paper, and now it's a section of the Review Journal for your birdcage, and they talk about. Jack Carter, of course, he's running for Senate against Ensign. He's the one that likes giving rectal exams to dogs and cats. And they talk about Sunday's debate with Ensign and Jack Carter, Jimmy Carter's son, and the people sitting out there watching the debate. And then the USA Today, they had family ties, relatives have inside track for lobbying for tax dollars. And then on the right, they talk about hit and run deaths, see a 20% increase. And could that be because they raised the speed limits to, sky's the limit now instead of keeping it at 55? So I think that's probably part of the problem. I don't know what was wrong with that 55. 55 and alive, right? And then don't the cars conserve gas better when they're at 55 and lower versus 55 and over? So, and it's all politicians' campaigns are invading MySpace to talk about that, as well as safer railroads. There were fewer train accidents in the first half of this year than last. And the United States confirms North Korea blast was nuclear. So they're this is turning into a disaster over there. So I said before on one of the message boards, if Nixon could go to China, why can't Bush go to North Korea? And that might be what it takes. Send Bush over there. Maybe he could hammer something out with them. So, and also in the second front section, also USA Today up on the right-hand, on the left-hand corner, talk about the Bears squeaking one out. Last Monday night, and then on the right, talk about some author, blah blah blah. So, and also in the life section, and talk about Jerry Springer. I guess he's as a surprise of Dancing with the Stars, and that one lady, she quit the show because Sarah Evans, was that her name? Sarah, whatever her name is, because she's supposedly filing a divorce from her husband. And on the left, they talk about in the Lifeline, ABC looks down the road to October. ABC has ordered 6 episodes of October Road, a family drama starring Brian Greenberg from One Tree Hill as an acclaimed novelist who returns to his hometown to teach at the local university, according to The Hollywood Reporter. The pilots, which didn't make the cut in May, co-stars Tom Berenger and Jeff Stultz. So that brand, it sounds familiar. It sounds like the Max Bickford series that Katie Sackhoff was on. And then CW is seeing Ghosts, another drama. The CW network has ordered a pilot for Ghosts, a drama about the lives and loves of 20-somethings who work in an elite surveillance unit for the FBI. The network also ordered scripts for a military-themed drama, The Good Ship, and an untitled family drama. Untitled family drama. The Good Ship follows young doctors aboard a naval Navy hospital ship dispatched to hotspots around the world to provide aid. That might be interesting. A little different spin on a hospital drama, I guess. And the Film Society is going to honor Diane Keaton. Isn't she one of those L'Oreal commercials now? So, and then we'll get into the news to you. And this first one is from today we had. And let's see. Koenig is in there. Let's see. He's getting ready to review Torchwood, so we'll see about that. Torchwood, I don't know if they made announcements coming here yet or not. And today from Hawaii, of course, Hawaii's quake damage estimated at $46 million. This is from the Associated Press. Their preliminary damage estimates from the earthquake that shook Hawaii over the weekend hit $46 million on Tuesday. And President Bush declared a major disaster, opening the way for federal aid. Damage to 7 schools and a harbor on the island of Hawaii account for most of the preliminary figure. The damage estimate included $31 million for schools, $8 million for Kauai Harbor, $4.89 million to businesses, $650,000 to homes, $800,000 to roads and $750,000 to bridges. A statewide figure including damage to the other islands was not yet available. So that's going to be probably a big mess to clean up over there, huh? And also, I'll see it on Yahoo News as well. The United States population passes 300 million. This is from today. Maybe there will be a bigger party when the population hits 400 million. Save the date in 2043. America's official population passed the 300 million mark on Tuesday, fueled by a growing number of immigrants and their children. The moment, recorded at 7:46 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, passed with little fanfare, perhaps dampened by a divisive debate over illegal immigration, and the fact that many experts think the population had already hit the 300 million mark months ago. There were no fireworks or government-sponsored celebration, just a written statement from President Bush near the end of the workday welcoming the milestone, and it's a further proof that the American dream remains blah, blah, blah. So 300 million people in this country now. But they say that number has been passed months ago, and maybe some even say by years ago because due to the illegal immigrants. So I don't know. We'll see. And also from today, the 21 finalists for the new Seven Wonders of the World. Number one is the Acropolis in Athens, Greece. It's in alphabetical order. Two, Alhambra, Granada in Spain. The Angkor Wat Temple in Cambodia. The Chichen Itza Aztec site in Yucatan, Mexico. Number five, a Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Six is a Colosseum in Rome. Seven is Easter Island statues in Chile. Eight is the Eiffel Tower in Las Vegas. No, Eiffel Tower in Paris. Nine is the Great Wall of China. And let's see, I'm skipping around here. Somebody's, something in Turkey. The Hagia Sophia Church in Istanbul, Turkey. Number 11 is Kiyomizu Temple in Kyoto, Japan. Number 12 is Kremlin, St. Basil's Square in Moscow. So several. Where's the United States here in this mess? 17, Statue of Liberty in New York. Stonehenge in the United Kingdom is 18. So it looks like we only have the top 20 women. We only have one, the Statue of Liberty. I remember years ago, used to have the Buckingham Fountain in Chicago is one of the seven wonders of the world, but I guess not anymore. So, and also we had today that Wesley Snipes accused of tax fraud. Actor Wesley Snipes was indicted Tuesday on 8 counts of tax fraud, accused of trying to cheat the government of nearly $12 million in false refund claims and not filling returns for 6 years. As soon as you think you can get away with this, you can never outsmart the government. You could do it for a while, but they eventually catch up to you. You must have been out of his mind. Prosecutors said Snipes fraudulently claimed refunds totaling nearly $12 million in 1996 and 1997 on income taxes already paid. The star of the Blade trilogy, blah, 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 and other films, including Jungle Fever, White Men Can't Jump, was also charged with failure to file returns from 1999 through 2004. According to the indictment, Snipes had his taxes prepared by accountants with a history of filing false returns to reap payments for their clients. The firm, American Rights Litigators, would receive 20% of refunds from their clients, according to the indictment. It's a conspiracy against the IRS, basically to harass the IRS from doing its lawful job in terms of collection of taxes, said an attorney, U.S. Attorney Paul Perez. If convicted of all charges, Snipes could face 16 years in prison, 5 years each on two conspiracy counts, and 1 year each on six counts of failure to file income tax returns. Wow. He's 44 years old, who had a home in Windermere near Orlando, Florida. He has not been arrested because authorities don't know where he is. That'll help. He's taking off. He's in South America or something. He's not coming back. Snipes' manager and attorney did not return messages from the Associated Press. So the indictment said Snipes conspired with American Rights Litigators founder Eddie Ray Kahn and tax preparer Douglas Rosilli Sr. to file false refund claims based on a bogus argument that only one income from foreign sources was subject to taxation, whatever that means. We need a tax attorney to figure this out. And that included a claim for a $7.3 million refund for 1997, in which an amended tax return reported Snipes' adjusted income as zero. So, I don't know. 1997, isn't it in the middle of all those, didn't he do that U.S. Marshals movie back then? So, I don't know, unless he didn't get paid for that movie, who knows? And also, we had this from Air America. They filed for Chapter 11. This is Air America Radio filed for bankruptcy reorganization Friday in the latest patch of turbulence to befall the liberal talk radio network that launched 2 years ago, headlined by comedian and author Al Franken. The network will continue to operate with funding from its investor group, led by Real Networks Incorporated CEO Robert Glasser, who owns 36.7% of the company, and two other former board members. He and who else? Mehead, who else also putting money into it, Rob Reiner, and a couple others. They shot themselves in the foot when they first started that network because they're buying whole blocks of times on these radio stations, and also buying the time, in some cases, buying the whole radio station. So, I mean, Franken and Garofalo, I mean, those two are getting paid millions of dollars to do their shows. And so, right out of the block, they're already in debt. So, you need to start with a couple programs, and then you go from there. You know, build a little syndication where you don't come out of the block with a whole network right away. And then have the unlimited pockets that some of these, like CW, they got the pockets of, Time Warner and also Paramount. So, the company also named a new CEO Friday, Scott Elberg, a radio executive who joined the company in May 2005 following stints at the New York area radio station WKTU and other places. Air America had dismissed rumors just 1 month ago that it was playing blah, blah. So they've been playing around with bankruptcy here for a while, the radio station. They had a problem when they first started with the urban owner of some stations. One was in Chicago. And I remember all that was going on. They paid the station group in Chicago some money, and then the check bounced. And then the owner of the stations took the Air America off his stations. And then the Air America, Randy Rhodes, and I went on a campaign against this guy who owns these radio stations. She wanted to slam his head in the car door and everything else. I mean, some of this they brought on themselves. So I'm not going to shed any tears if they're gone. So, court documents show that Multicultural Radio Broadcasting Incorporated, a creditor with whom the network had tussled in its early days, had Air America's bank accounts frozen. So, you don't tell somebody you want to crash their head into a car door and expect them to roll over. You know what I mean? Especially if owning radio stations is probably your livelihood. You know what I'm saying? And next up is we had this one from... also from New York City, a son removed as Brooke Astor's guardian. Philanthropist Brooke Astor's son has been permanently removed as guardian of her multi-million-dollar estate, according to a settlement announced in court on Friday. The agreement allows the 104-year-old Astor's new guardians, 104, Annette De La Renta and J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, to remain in place instead of her son, Anthony Marshall. In July, Marshall's son, Philip Marshall, 54, accused his father in court papers of neglecting Astor while looting her estate. He contended his frail and ailing grandmother, one of the city's top socialites for decades, had been reduced to sleeping in a ragged gown and on a filthy couch and was subsisting on pureed peas and oatmeal. In the world? This woman's one of the wealthiest women in the country. The court previously had made J.P. Morgan Chase the guardian of Astor's property, and De La Renta, the wife of fashion designer Oscar De La Renta, the guardian of her personal well-being. Astor is the widow of Vincent Astor, the great-great-grandson of John Jacob Astor, who had made a fortune in fur trading and New York real estate. In the decades after her husband's death in 1959, Astor gave away nearly $200 million to support New York's great cultural institutions and a host of humbler projects, winning a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, in 1998. Her son is a former diplomat and sometime Broadway producer who won Tony Awards in 2003 and 2004. So it's amazing. Somebody with that kind of wealth... reduced to living in squalor. So, but I think our guest is online, so we shall bring her on. And Miss Carol Barbie, are you there, Miss?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for being on.
Thank you. I just heard the Jericho sound. That was so cool.
Yes, we've been playing it. Jericho's now. There it goes again.
Whoa!
We're getting attacked.
You know what? I didn't realize it's a different Morse code every episode, huh?
Yeah, it is. There's a clue in every in every episode.
It's incredible.
So you have to know Morse code then, huh?
Yeah.
You do.
A couple of the websites have been decoding it. I didn't know that. And I went back, I'm like, well, yeah, they each do sound a little different than the other.
Yeah, somebody even decoded the Mandarin that our Chinese broadcast
That's right.
Did, and it was correct, too. So
wow. Well, thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I got to say, the program is great. I mean, it's a great escapism show. I mean, it's terrific. So
thank
I want to get
you.
That out of the way. Everybody I talk to, people here and, people I work with and everything else, they just love the series.
Thank you.
We're
so thrilled. You know, we've been doing it in sort of a vacuum for a while, and then it finally hit the air, and so it's new to us that other people are like, "Hey, I like that." So we're having a good time.
Yeah. Now the pickup last week. Congratulations. The ratings were fine. Were you surprised it came so soon, or?
I was a little surprised because I had actually just spoken with the network the day before, and they were telling me to keep my expectations low, and they said, "Look, you're going to be up against 30 Rock and another comedy, and we're going to see, we expect you to take a hit, and there's baseball." So they thought that our numbers would be low that night, and so they were saying, "Don't freak, you know, we're going to wait another week before we decide." So I wasn't expecting the pickup, but then our numbers were really good again, and we got it that day. So it was really fun. It was really fun to get them early.
True, because a lot of the critics, I'm on the TV Guide community there, and the other one, Mark Berman, all the mail, "Oh, Jericho's gonna be the first one to go," and everything. It's gotta be nice to know that they're wrong about something for once, huh?
It is. It's like, ha ha. It is fun.
Because I created a show once, and I got as far as a pilot, and nothing happened to it.
That's cool. That's pretty far to get, though. Good for you.
Well, it's one of those reality shows, so I'm kind of glad because we've gotten lost in the shuffle of all the.
Yeah.
But it's really, because it's up against some serious competition. It's managed to, kind of slide in there,
I really feel that, and I've felt that way ever since I, got a stack of scripts on my desk, and they said, would you like to be involved in one of these? And I read Jericho, and I said, my imagination takes off when I think about this premise, and I just felt like it was something that was going to capture people's imaginations, and it has, and it's a little bit of the little engine that could. It's sort of finding its audience, but more and more and more, it's just picking up steam.
Yeah. Now you've been involved in several other shows. You've been involved in Providence.
Yeah.
Now how does this compare to Providence? It's a heavy drama, but the premise is really dark. But I mean, it's
But you know what? Providence was great. That was my first job as a writer, and I was there for 5 years, and it was great training because it was all about family. It was all about character, and that show also had a lot of humor to it. So that was fun, but it had a huge amount of heart. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it had a huge amount of sort of heart and emotion and family. I also know how to move actors around a kitchen set really well. sometimes that comes in handy. But this show, ultimately at its core, it's a family drama, and it's about, if you don't care about the actual people who are living in Jericho and you can't see yourself as being one of them, then you're not going to care about the premise.
That's true. That's true, because everybody's saying, they're not showing the destruction of the cities across the country. And I said, well, no, that's not the point of it. The point is how this little town is, reacting to what's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually loved the idea that it was being told from a little bit of a distance, from a little bit of a safe distance, although they're not safe. I mean, they're all sorts of things come at them. But I think it's a really responsible and lovely sort of way for America to look at this situation and really examine it, and not examine it in the heat of, obviously we have a lot of sort of tragedies and fires and weird things that happen to these people because the bombs went off, but to be able to watch it from afar a little bit and know that it's coming and sort of think about what that means, I think it's a good way to have us, start that discussion.
Yeah, and you're also on Judging Amy, which is another excellent show.
Thank you.
That was terrific. And she just signed a development deal with ABC, I believe.
I know. I just sent her an email. She is great. Yeah. Amy Brenneman is a hard act to follow. Mm. I loved working with her. She's a great artist, and she's a good friend, and she's hilarious and game for anything, and I can't say enough good things about her. So I'm thrilled she's coming back to television.
Yeah,
she's a great star.
That show was underappreciated as well. I mean, it was in there, but didn't get the attention I think that series deserved either.
Thank you.
And Providence was Mike Farrell. That's a great and close to home.
Yes, I was on Close to Home. Yes,
and you're also an actress too.
I used to be an actress for the longest time, and which really helps with writing. I know you're a writer. I don't know if you've done any of that, but it really helps because you're able to sort of figure out what actors can actually say, and you can also talk to the actors because some writers, feel like actors are a strange species, and so I feel like no, I speak actor. I know.
Yeah, well, it's like we've had Katie Sackhoff on, she says sometimes she goes to the writers. I said, do you really like that? Do you like? Yeah, I mean, mind your own business. You're the actor. I'm writing the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did what was her experience?
She goes to them. They go to the writers. They don't seem to mind too much. I think if I was writing a show and the actor's coming out like this, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, I've slaved over the script for you. I mean,
yeah, really. I mean, it depends. It very much depends on how good their ideas are and how they approach it. But I'll tell you, my way of working has always been, I work really closely with the actors. I just feel like at the end of the day, I want all the ideas, and I want to be able to pick and choose which are the right ideas. Mm-hmm. And the only time you sort of run into trouble is when there's the feeling of, well, you have to take this note because this star is sort of, insisting on it. But I've always sort of set up a situation or been in a situation where, like, this is one of the reasons I loved Amy Brenneman so much. She was definitely an 800-pound gorilla. She was an executive producer on the show. Mm-hmm. She created the show.
Wow.
And I came in, in season 5, and so she certainly had a lot more to say than I did. Although when I was executive producer, she says she would give me her ideas, we would discuss them, and then I would make the call. And if I said great, if I said no, she never questioned it. She was just, it was that feeling of we're all here to create, and writers write, actors act, directors direct, it's always worked out pretty well. Well, I love the actors on Jericho.
Yeah, it seems like it's the actors were meant for these roles, and I know it's kind of cliche, but I mean, first you get Skeet Ulrich as Jake. Yeah. It seemed like the role was meant for him. Was there anybody else considered for the role before him?
They talk, there's always like these lists that you get, but really Skeet was the one all along that they wanted, and that just it felt like if we could just get Skeet, we would have the right guy. So no, it was basically him. There were lots of other names on the list, but we wanted him.
Good. And then he's had a couple tries of the series too, so it's good. He's had a success with this, with Jericho.
Yeah, I'm so glad because I loved Miracles. That was a great pilot, but he's I think he's going to be on this one for a while.
And then Gerald McRaney.
Yeah.
I mean, he is wonderful. Now what about that cough now? Are you guys going with the cop?
Oh, you're talking about Robert Hawkins?
No, Gerald McRaney, Mayor Johnston.
He's
been coughing the last couple of weeks.
Oh, I'm sorry, you said cough.
I'm sorry.
I thought you said cop.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hawkins is a cop. Or he says he is. Gerald McRaney with the cough?
Mm.
Yes, it's interesting. In this new world where, in this new world, a cold can kill you.
Yeah.
And we're sort of exploring that with him, and he's awesome, and we love him.
Yeah, that speech he gave at the end of last week's episode was wonderful. I mean, they're in the church with the powers out and the candle. I mean, whoever's your visual people are wonderful because they come out and they pan from the steeple down to the church, and the music, everything is you could tell. I keep telling people I bump into it. It's like a motion picture you're watching every week.
Thank you.
Because it's just, you could tell the music and the photography and everything else just seems all to go together. But that speech he gave at the end of the episode was, we're all in life, how we're going to stand for life and everything else. It's like, wow. I mean, the whole cast is wonderful. He kind of, I think he sets the tone for the whole series.
He does. He's such the patriarch, and he's a great actor,
mm-hmm.
and he's a lovely man. And every time he speaks, no matter how much he's in the episode, you're just drawn to him, mm-hmm. and you believe him. And he's funny, and he's all those lovely things. But I think what he says in that speech to me is the crux of the series. He says, you know, because the fight ahead, we have to fight for every life, even when it feels hopeless, because the fight ahead of us is not just for survival, it's for our humanity. Mm. And to me, that is what the show is about. Mm. How do you react in a situation like this, in these dire circumstances, or when it doesn't get so dire, when it's just, you know, what it is, no power for a while, no gas, no, you know, whatever it is, how do you react, and how do you treat your fellow man, and who do you become? And that's sort of what it's all about.
Well, I think I think one of the things that's driving the storyline is the cop from St. Louis. It comes with his family, mm-hmm. and they're total mystery. And then they meet the guy who's got radiation, and he tells them, why did you leave, and this and that.
Why did you go back to Denver?
Is it going to take the whole this season to figure out what's going on with these people?
The way we've designed the episodes, each episode sort of gives you a new clue and hopefully resolves something as well. I mean, we don't want to frustrate the audience. We want to make it... We want to give you a link in the chain each time. Mm-hmm. So it's all sort of building towards a resolution. And what we're sort of looking at each season, and I'm getting cocky and saying each season like we're going to be here for 10 years. But we're looking at each season as, you know, a chapter in the book. And each chapter will have its own resolution and have its own and hopefully be satisfying in a huge way to the audience, and then open a door that takes you to the next level.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, you know, I never really got into Lost, and I've been on the boards with this. You know, if you're lost with the Lost, get lost in Jericho. I've been kind of throwing that around.
Thank you for that.
It is, because, you know, I tried with Lost, but there's so much, you know, this and this and this, and you're like, oh my, forget it. I can't follow the show, you know, because it's too much to worry. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
at least
I was a huge Lost fan to begin with too, but I really and those are like amazingly talented writers and actors, and it looks gorgeous and the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, I think people get frustrated and they want to, and that's something coming into this for us where we knew we would be sort of compared to Lost or like in that genre, and we just, as the little engine that could, you don't have the luxury of doing that when people are already frustrated. They're already hooked into Lost and they're going to stay there. But they don't want us to come along and do that too. And I just also feel like I want it to be fun for the audience. I want them to feel like they're playing along and that it's a fair fight and that they could actually figure things out.
Yeah. Actually, a question from one of the chat rooms. Was the series a hard sell to CBS?
You know what? Oddly enough, not so much. Because I think CBS was looking at that moment to expand their landscape because they have so many procedurals and they're so successful at that. But they were looking at their landscape and going, you know, we have great shows, but they're all the same show. We need something different. And so they were actually kind of rolling the dice a little bit. I don't think, and you could ask them, but I don't think they would have said that this would have been the one they would have bet on. I think it was one of those like, yeah, this is cool. Let's give this a shot. But they had others that I think they felt were more of a sure bet.
Well, yeah, Smith, and that's already gone, and a couple of other shows are struggling a bit, too. CSI, well, they're in that big fight with Grey's Anatomy, but still, I mean, it's been on for so many years. But and then, with the actors, was it a hard sell for the actors? I know we've had a lot of people on from Galactica. They said, you know, when we first got the script, like, oh, Battlestar Galactica, and they kind of threw it away, you know, and then until they actually looked at the script and read it.
Yeah.
You know, was that a hard sell for the actors, Jericho?
No, I mean, I think that the hardest sell was probably just to talk Skeet Ulrich into doing a series, but he was in the mood to do one, or was predisposed to do one because he has young children and he really wanted to just be home and not run around the country doing movies for a little while for them. But no, I think that we have a lot of actors come to us and really want to be in the show because I think there's a hunger. I know there is with writers, and I think there definitely is with actors as well. There's a hunger with all the procedural stuff that's been out there for so long. There's a hunger to do stuff about actual people and characters and people with backstories and relationships. And a lot of that just hasn't been on the air that much recently, and they're hungry to do it. And this has that rare opportunity to do something that's also about a larger issue and are really drawn to that.
Yeah, well, it does kind of play to real life events because you got the whole North Korea thing with the nukes. So everybody's kind of like, well, maybe what if they drop? They say they don't have the capability of launching, against the United States, but you never know. I mean, it also gives some basis. It's like with Galactica, they go off. Some of their stories are based on real life events. They kind of twist them to their own way. But I mean, the premises are. I don't know. A lot of people are comparing Jericho to Galactica, kind of. I mean, the same kind of premise that their civilization was wiped out by nukes, and then and the series seemingly the United States. Like that question hasn't been answered. Has the whole world been nuked? Because you saw the footage from China with the United States with the marks, the nuclear blast. But then you wonder, did the United States respond, and then is thereby most of the world nuked?
Right.
So that's a big. Are you guys going to answer that question or no?
We are. Stay tuned. your mind is definitely going in the right place. That's great. And I just want to say, like, to be compared to Galactica is like a huge honor, because I'm a huge Galactica fan, and so are most of the writers here, and that the name Battlestar Galactica gets used all the time, because I think they're a gold standard. I really do. I think that's such an incredibly well-written show and incredibly well-acted and produced, and it feels like a real gold standard, so we revere them as well.
You have to search long and hard to find a town that didn't really exist?
That didn't exist.
Jericho? Is there a town, Jericho? No,
there's not. There's no Jericho, Kansas.
But what I'm saying is, did it take a while for you to find a name that did not relate to any, so no one got freaked out?
Yeah, you know what? The guy who created the show is named John Steinberg, and he has a partner, Josh Scher, and they came up. Steinberg, I think, is the one who came up with the name Jericho, and I think because of its biblical connotation, it was the first city, and then of course it was destroyed and had to be rebuilt, and I think it was, it's a cool name. And sooner or later our show becomes sort of the new Old West, because they revert, they don't have power and they have all these things, so ultimately we kind of get there. But no, what they did was they sort of scoped out a place geographically in Kansas that, first of all, you'd be able to see a bomb from Denver, but also that is far enough away from all the major cities that it would not have been attacked or been affected immediately by the attack. Mm. So it's sort of a geographical, quandary.
Yeah. Now, when the harping the reins, but when the ratings start rolling in, how did it make everyone feel in the light of all the criticisms?
Everybody was. We were thrilled. It's just so gratifying that people like what you're doing, and we felt really good about our pilot. We felt really good about episodes 2 and 3, and that's what we had when we first aired. And so we knew that if they came to the pilot, we figured that we thought they might come to the pilot because CBS did a great job of promoting it, and it's a cool premise, and it's a provocative premise, and if you're not completely freaked out by it, I think you'll be drawn to it. So we figure they'll come to the pilot. If they have a good experience and they show up the next week, we thought we would have them because we felt really good about the episodes, and it's borne itself out. I feel like people are coming back.
Yeah, and then some people call Jericho the day after series. How do you feel about that? Because I remember when it first aired, I was kept hoping. I wish they keep going with this. So this kind of I hate to put the two together, but when it was first airing, because that was also shot in Lawrence, Kansas, right?
I know, isn't that funny?
Yeah. And I thought, I wish they keep going with this, and you see how these people carry on after the nuke blast.
You were ahead of your time. You were like, come on, do Jericho already.
That was back in what, 80?
Something like
89 or 86 or something like that. But that was...
It was cool. Yes. I remember it, and I loved it. And I think that it really freaked people out. But I think Jericho first of all, there's nothing been on the air for the longest time that has dealt with this issue, and I think it's something that's so much a part of our consciousness from a while ago, and it sort of kind of has gone away a little bit, and we're all about Iraq and all the rest of it. Well, now, of course, with North Korea, it's coming back, but when we started to do Jericho, it was like it was an issue that really wasn't being discussed that much anymore, and I think Jericho has the unique opportunity to incrementally deal with this issue and have people, think, what would I do in that situation? How would I feel if right here, right now, this happened?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real, I don't know, I think it's a cautionary tale, and I think it's an important thing for us to be discussing.
Well, it's so escapism, too.
It's
you know, somewhat, you know, there's some reality to it, but there's so much going on. I think, you know, we need something that takes us out of our own problems here, and we could dive into the problems, you know, in the city, in Jericho.
Yeah.
And then, what was the other question? About the teen storyline, you know, like all the teens, a lot of people are saying, the teens are whipping it up in that mansion last week.
Yeah.
I'm saying, well, these kids don't know what else to do. I mean, you know, they're carrying on their lives, and, you know, she's got the big house and all the food, so why not, right?
And teenagers, you know, it's like people don't stop being who they are, because, and particularly like teenagers. Teenagers don't have a huge sense of you know, perspective, and they're overly dramatic, and they're underwhelmed, you know, mm-hmm. all at the same time.
Yeah.
Plus her parents are dead, right?
Yeah, yeah, her parents. She doesn't know where they are, if they're dead or what, and she's got the big house and all the supplies, and she's a popular girl, and I also think this is a girl who does not want to be alone.
No.
She is not used to being alone.
No, and her own generator at that mansion,
that's,
too.
That's right.
Now, the character I like, she's not a main character, but I like Gracie Lee.
I mean,
she is, she, you know what, I'm showing my age, but she reminds me of that little biddy that ran the, that worked in the mercantile over in, on the Waltons, whatever her name was. And then also of Mrs. Mrs. Olson on Little House on the Prairie, the meddlesome gossip, and, you know, a little bit on the evil side. You know, I, when they had the having the cooking all the food, she goes, "At least they could have done is thank me."
That's right. I love her. That's Beth Grant, and she's an actress I've actually worked with quite a bit, and in the past, and she's great.
She does a great job in that role. I mean, in the little grocery store, and then last week. The last bag of corn chips, and Skylar offers the other girl, Hawkins' daughter, $20 for the bag of chips and everything. So it's good, and I like the dynamic that you guys are doing with Dale and her. You know that you know, his parents are. You know, he and like, especially during that one episode, he kept playing the recording of them getting blasted.
Yeah.
And she's kind of taking the motherly role with him, more or less. So that's nice. I mean, you know, feel sorry for that kid because he felt sorry because he kept playing and kept playing. I'm like, oh my god.
I know that killed me. That really killed me. I remember when we shot the pilot. We were shooting the pilot, and we shot that scene. And I was sitting behind the monitor with John Turteltaub, the director, and he was doing this close up on Dale, where he's leaning down and he's got his head down on the table, and he's just playing it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And he was doing the extreme close up. And I looked at that, and I said to John, I said, "And this is the moment the show gets picked up to go to air," because it was so heartbreaking and beautiful. And that actor is lovely. His name is Eric Knudsen.
And he got the food from the train and surprised her with the food and everything. So I like that, you know, because you know, a lot of these people, their families are wiped out, and now it's going to see a different family dynamic take place on the show between different characters who are not really related.
They bond to one another because he needs a mom, you know, and they bond.
Now, are there any, the show shoots in what, in Fillmore, California, and in Lawrence, Kansas, right?
We filmed the pilot in Fillmore, a lot of it in Fillmore, and in, Santa Clarita, but now we filmed the series in Van Nuys, and we've built a back lot here, so we have a lot of our own stuff here that we can shoot. Main Street of Jericho is here. And then we go out and shoot whenever we need to. And sometimes we go back out to film more.
There you go. Now, will the series, a question for Chamberlain, will the series ever leave Jericho?
Yes.
Really?
Are you talking about, you know, do storylines outside of Jericho?
Or you know, may move on to a different city, or I think that means we'll leave Jericho.
We'll have to see how many years this show goes, and then yes, we will. But I will tell you that one of the most, you know, the thing that people are dying to see is what's going on outside of Jericho, and we get to see that. And and so we'll, the show, I sort of liken the show to the Big Bang, literally. You know, this Big Bang happens, and we're watching the particles just flying out into space, and they're moving slowly and incrementally, and we're sort of following them out. So the show will keep doing that.
Now, is the show gonna, as it continues, like if you go to season two, or are you talking about it now, introducing new characters at all? I mean, I know you introduced some new, but like the guy with the radiation, but he's just dead.
Victor died. Yes.
He's dead. But are you going to introduce characters that are going to stay on the show? Have you thought about that for like season two, maybe? Or
yeah, absolutely. I think we are talking about that, and what we want to be able to do, and which what we are doing is, this is a show where nobody's safe. I mean, I think we want to be able to play the arc of a character to its natural conclusion, mm-hmm. and so we don't want to just keep somebody on the show because, you know, it's like it's going to have to make sense, and anybody can die, and it's a dangerous world. So we definitely are going to regenerate the cast. I mean, people will come in and leave.
Very good. Well, I think there's a episode coming up where you dive into Jake as some kind of adversary that comes onto the show as well, or some kind of dynamic. What happened 5 years ago? Because that's a big mystery too. What happened that he left Jericho 5 years ago? Right.
Yep.
And then tomorrow, tomorrow's program edition that they his mother knows something. I saw the preview. I'm forgetting the wordage, but the his mother knows the secret he's keeping from Johnston, right?
Right.
And she has a big blow up because she wants him to tell his father what's been going on for 5 years, right?
Right.
And he doesn't want to tell him, so that's a big mystery. Now, she got up, actually, and somebody else mentioned that to me at work. She got up at the end of the – Gail got up at the end of the episode, and somebody's missed some loved one, and she got up. Are there more green children out there, or
No, there are not, but I think that she was probably doing that in solidarity of the people who were missing from the town.
Ah.
I mean, everybody there pretty much had known all the policemen who died, and so there's that. And I also think that she would have probably known Emily's fiance and Dale's mother, and you know, so I think it was out of solidarity.
And Shep, and he got
for mentioning Shep.
Shep, right? And then Gray. He disappeared. We haven't known what happened to him yet either, right?
No.
They went off to see what's. They went a different direction. He went north and west, I believe, right? Or wherever he went.
He went towards Topeka.
Okay.
And Shep went towards Denver.
Denver. So we don't know what happened to. Shep, we presume, is dead, right?
Shep was not happy when he left town. So he could be gone.
Yeah. So we don't know if he committed suicide, or because he wasn't happy because he played a role in killing the one guy down in the mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was there's probably some story there that's going to be fleshed out as well, huh? Why they kill him, right?
Yeah. Wasn't that actor good? That was
what's his name from The Wonder Years, wasn't it? Or
it was the guy. It was the father from 90210.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Mr. Walsh.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, well, he looked different from then and that. Wow.
I know, he had a big beard on and everything. Yeah.
Well, it's been several years.
Yeah.
Everybody said, "Are you kidding me? It's Brendan Walsh's father." But it's a big mystery. Now the election now, because when you first started a program, Johnston was running for re-election. Is that going to be resolved as well?
Yes, boy. Oh. you are good, man. You are really making me feel good about the stories that we have coming up.
No, I keep track of these things. You know, I was wondering, because you know, if Jericho is surviving by itself, is he going to have to declare martial law? You know.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of that going on, and when the election comes back. You know, all these sort of things that we're seeing now with Iraq are, you know, play in Jericho, because it's like, who's going to be strong on security? Who's trying to scare the hell out of everybody to get votes? Mm-hmm. Who's just trying to do the right thing for the people? All of that, you know. So we play a lot of that in this little small town election.
Very good. Now he's running. I don't think. Was it clear who he was running against? Was he running against Gray?
Gray.
Okay, that's who it was. Okay, wasn't sure, because the only sign we saw was re-elect Johnston Green, you know, right?
There used to be more shots of the Gray Anderson stuff, but I'm not sure what all made it into the final pilot. But yeah, no, it's Johnston Green against Gray Anderson.
It should be interesting. And he socked him in the gut in the first episode, too, which was nice, huh?
How'd you feel about that?
I thought, he deserved it, because you can tell he's kind of... he's a good actor too. What's his name?
His name is Michael Gaston, and he is a very good actor.
He's one of them scene chewers. You can see him in the back. He's like chewing up the scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's a force to be reckoned with. He's also a huge guy.
Yeah, and he owns the mine they all went into, right?
Yes.
And then they
he's part owner with Skyler's father.
Ah, Skyler's father. And then he says sneering at the mayor, so you should be more prepared for this and everything else. And he takes him in his office and socks him in the stomach. That was a great scene too. I really like Gerald McCraney.
Yeah, oh, no.
Please don't kill him off.
No. We love Gerald McCraney too. He is super awesome. Yeah. And I will tell you that we have a great storyline for him. So we're really looking forward to.
That's good. And Pamela Reed is also excellent. It's good that she finally, she finally has a series that's going to be around hopefully for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that role. She's meant, Gail Green, that first episode when she takes Jake to the cemetery to visit her grandfather. I mean, it was really, and she kind of slips him the money, and he said, "You got clumsy hands," and everything. That was like, everybody's, mom, here's a couple bucks, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, and she's a great actress, too. And last week you fleshed out that she also has some nursing experience.
Yeah, exactly, that she's, and you're also going to see, her backstory also involves, she kind of grew up on a ranch, and so she's her thing is horses, so she's got a whole, horse ranch that she goes to. That's her hobby. Hmm. And at some point it's got to be more than a hobby because they're going to need those horses to do other things.
Yeah. Now, will these question for chat room, will the season end on a cliffhanger?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, definitely. But as I said, we're also going to answer some questions so that you get a lot and you get more so that you'll want to come back. But yeah, definitely. No. I really do see it like each season, almost like a video game. Like each season takes you to the next level, and you get more and more rewards for sticking with it.
Go ahead.
Going back to that family from St. Louis, they got the story.
Hawkins.
He's asking the children, and she gets in trouble. I have this feeling that she was he held back more than he wanted to.
I think he wanted to strangle her, didn't he?
Well, because she looked very scared, and he just was like very calm with her, but I got this notion that he's not that calm usually.
Yeah, I think what's going on with that is Hawkins has been away from this family to a great degree for a while, and he's sort of lost his ability to be part of this family, and he's trying to get back to it, and he's not great at it.
Hmm. Yeah. That reminds me. When he's at the table with his son.
Yeah. And he said, "Who's going to take care of you?" He said, "Mommy."
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was a good scene too. I mean, we can tell everybody just loves the series. You guys really.
Thank you.
It's really. And then another question. Which characters are your favorite?
Which character are my favorite?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's hard to answer, huh?
I love writing Hawkins and his wife. I love those two characters, and I love writing Jake Green. I think he's and I love writing for Skeet because he's just such a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm writing an episode that centers a lot on Jake and Emily, and also has a big Hawkins story. So I love all those. I love all those characters a lot.
Very good. And what about Emily? Now, we saw her kiss Jake on the cheek last week, and now her fiancé his plane landed somewhere, right?
Yes.
And we don't know where he is, if he's dead or alive, and so that's going to probably play out, right? We don't know if she's going to get together with Jake or now if Heather's going to get together because she... Heather walked down to him in the shower and all that.
Yes,
so
right.
You guys are playing a little triangle there with those three.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then another one a lot of people like is Stanley. They love Stanley and his sister.
Love Stanley.
Yeah.
And Bonnie. Yeah, love Stanley. And Stanley and the IRS agent have a great chemistry. Mimi is her name.
Mimi Coppola, right?
Yeah, it's Alicia Coppola, and she plays the character of Mimi. But the two of them are hilarious, and also those are Brad Beyer plays Stanley, and Alicia Coppola plays Mimi, and the two of them are both such skilled actors. They're both really incredibly facile as comic actors, mm-hmm. but they're also really good at drama. So you can just play anything with them. So people love writing them.
Oh, that one scene where she, they come out after the fallout, and she picks her, what's this, and she named somebody. I forget who it was.
Bailey says that used to be Denver. That
used to be Denver, and then she meets up with him in the hospital, and he goes, "Oh, what happened to you?" I just touched the building, and he said, "I was out in the rain for 2 hours."
Yeah, right.
Well, I was gonna ask you, what's the explanation? She puts her hand, and it's like
it's the soot from the from the rain, nuclear rain,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they take her in for radiation
tests.
Well,
it's not nuclear rain because he survived the rain and
he drank the whole bottle of iodine, right?
Yeah, he did. Well, what we found out was when we did our research about the about radiation and fallout after a nuclear blast or whatever is that you know it's in the air, it's in the wind, and the fallout is basically just dust that's been radiated. It's dirt that's been radiated. A lot of it is the dirt that got kicked up in the air when the bombs were detonated, and it's just irradiated dirt. So wherever it falls, that's where it is. And then after a day, the half-life, it's so much less dangerous, and then a day after that, it's so much less dangerous. But if it rains and there's radiation in the air, it brings all of it straight down and puts it into onto whatever it falls onto. So it's a lot more dangerous when it rains,
because
it makes it concentrated. So that's what that episode was about. However, she only touched it with a hand. She touched one thing with her hand, and she was having more of an overreaction and a freak out about it. Mm. And whereas he'd been out in that rain for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and in the scenes between the two of them in the hospital were kind of nice. She goes, "You still owe the IRS $100,000.
Yeah.
That was good. And then at the end at the barbecue, he's kind of flirting with her a little bit, and he's got the mustard all over his face.
and his sister hands him a napkin like, idiot.
She's great, too. She really did a great job in the one with her in the house with the prison guards. Which one was that? Was the second one, right?
That was number two, yeah.
Yeah, and she's really hearing impaired, correct?
She is really hearing impaired. Shoshana Stern is her name, and she is awesome. She is, we've got some really good stuff planned for her. She's a fabulous actress, and we obviously the part wasn't written for somebody who was hearing impaired, but our casting people, who are just great, came to us and said, can you just look at this girl, because she's awesome, and maybe think about it. And we're like, done. She was just great.
That's great, because
she brought a depth to that character that we really loved.
Very good. And then the whole episode with them in the house with Emily, and she sees the gun in the picture,
gun.
And she with the six bullets, and she takes out. That was very well done too. And you left that mystery open too. How many prisoners are on that bus, and where are they?
Right.
So you answer some questions, and you ask some more. You answer some questions, and you ask. You seem like you ask more.
Yeah, we keep talking about you open a door and it goes to another door. But hopefully you also get enough of them answered so as not to totally frustrate you.
Yeah. Now looking at, we only got a couple minutes left. What can the fans and the viewers look forward to in the next few weeks or months?
We have Don't Miss Tomorrow Night. I'm not kidding. Don't Miss Tomorrow Night. Mm-hmm. There are some pretty big pieces of the mythology puzzle that start to be spun out about sort of the larger picture of what happened. And at the same time, we get deeper into where Jake was for 5 years and what happened, why he left town, and what the mystery is. What's the demon here in town for Jake, and why did he stay away for so long? So, we're trying to go big to the mythology and also go deep into the characters.
That should be interesting. Well, Carol, I actually stayed over a little bit. I do apologize, but I was so you could tell everybody, we just love that the series Jericho.
Thank
it's
you.
Just it's terrific, and hopefully we'll get some more of the cast members on to talk about the series, because it works out well, because today's Tuesday and tomorrow's the episode.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you for promoting the show, and thank you for having me, and keep watching.
You're welcome, Carol. Have a good night now.
Thanks, you too. Bye bye.
And thank you very much. That was Carol Barbie, one of the executive producers of Jericho, which is on Wednesdays on CBS. And that was pretty good. Some insight, background about the series. Terrific. And we'll take our break for the second hour. And when we come back, we'll be joined by crazy professor, Dr. Koenig Rules, with the review of the Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who from last Friday. Thank you very much.
from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
That the humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. Once again, live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Thank you for everybody joining us live. And, of course, everybody in the chat room and those listening on the podcast, thank you very much. We just had our first hour interview with Carol Barbie, one of the executive producers of Jericho on CBS. And in the chat room is Anorexic Pillow, Chris101940, Giorgio, Invincor, Elo Raptor, Koenig Rules, Dr. Net Ranger, myself, and Trencher are in the chat room. And now we'll be joined by the crazy professor, Dr. Koenig Rules. The TARDIS opening up. I think the crazy professor is getting off the TARDIS. Koenig Rules, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Ah, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
What do you think of that first hour interview? Terrific.
I heard some of it. I mean, she's very articulate. You know? I mean, I haven't been watching Jericho.
Oh,
actually.
Koenig, well, you got to take my advice. I've taken
your
advice.
Time to get a new guy.
I've taken your advice. You got to take mine. Watch Jericho.
I know. It's just, you know, I mean, I've watched Lost. I watched Supernatural. I watched Smallville. If I watch every damn show, I won't have a life for myself. You know?
I don't have a life.
But, I mean, if it's really a good show, I'll get the box set.
Excellent.
For the first season.
Excellent.
I will, you know. I mean, I like the young guy on it, and I like Gerald McRaney. It's just.
I didn't get to ask.
I'm sure it would be like Lost in terms of where I get hooked, and then I've got to see it every week, right?
You will, because it's...
You will, okay.
A lot of mystery. Well, see, I never really got into Lost, but, you know, I'm Lost.
Oh, it is such... It's slow in building, but this season three is kicking off. Just like, I think, season three on Battlestar Galactica is kicking off. I really like Galactica.
I always tell people, if you're lost with Lost, then get lost in Jericho. There you go.
Uh-huh.
I should be working
now,
for CBS.
Now, Sean, you said Jericho is the best show on television. Does that mean it's ranking above Battlestar?
I have to say yes.
Oh,
it is for
God!
Me. I have to say, you know.
You mean better than the sex scene?
Look, for one.
Come on.
That sex scene...
What sex scene?
The season premiere, sex scene went on too long.
With
Ellen and Cavill, and that went on too long. I don't know. I mean, just I still like Galacta. Don't get me wrong, but just Jericho.
Oh boy, you're really going to start creating the enemies. I'm glad I asked this question.
Jericho's number one. Galactica's two. Who is three?
We're just talking to her.
What
right?
about the 4400?
Oh, I like that. See, that's the thing. I don't know.
Probably number three with who, right?
It tied for three with who?
Yeah, I don't think so.
We just talked to her.
I would actually put 4400 a little bit above who. Now I'm gonna get, you know, the chef.
Now Carol was talking about all the people that she works with are big Battlestar fans. So that, to me,
I think they lifted a lot from Battlestar with this show.
Hold on. This is my question.
Okay.
I think the ratings on cable are a sham.
Okay.
They're even more BS than...
Can we quote you?
You can if you want. They're even more BS than the network ratings.
But not
You know why?
Because
everyone talks about Battlestar.
Right? Not BSG.
Not BSG.
No. Okay.
Everyone talks about Battlestar, but the ratings suck.
Yeah.
So that tells me one thing. There's more than 2 million or 3 people watching, and I think it's more like 9 or 10 million.
Yeah,
so you think the cable ratings are actually not reflective of the audience?
It's ridiculous. I've said that before. I mean,
oh, I agree too. I agree totally.
I think they're even more off than they are. Like
the networks.
You know, the networks. They say they're about 10%. Okay, I think they're more on than the cable. Cable, I think they're way off.
I agree.
For all the people that talk about Battlestar and only 2.9 million people watching without it.
You see the DVDs flying off the shelves and all that.
Yeah, I don't get it. Why is only 2.9 million people watching?
By the way,
the ratings for the initial showing Friday night. They have another one
later, and
iTunes and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, and people record it to watch it later.
Well,
so
did you get the ratings?
More millions watching it.
What are the ratings from last week? Did you get the ratings?
I don't know. Look,
I don't know. It's probably 1.7, 1.6, 1.8.
The people that run sci-fi, you can't tell me if they think they know everything.
Yes.
Put it on Sunday night. I bet you it'll do like 5 or 6 because most people are going to watch Sunday night.
Five or six?
Well, yeah, the Dead Zone and 4400 do very good on Sunday.
Cable shows can't get a 5 or 6. Raw can get a 5 or 6 on cable.
That's what I'm telling you.
How much
does
Live Rocks get? LV Rocks? How much does that get?
0.00001.
Well, you know, we have a very.
I think it goes to 0.00002.
Our demo is much higher, though. We got a very educated audience here.
It's going to climb up right now this half hour.
It's hard,
don't you think?
It's hard because we grade on a curve.
Yeah. Now the Vince was saying that Who is the best show on TV? They're all good. I mean, really, it's like
have you ever seen the movie Event Horizon.
No.
Yeah, that was an awesome movie.
Horror film, and there's a two-parter of Who that is very reminiscent of Event Horizon with Tennant this season. And for that reason alone, mm-hmm. because Doctor Who focuses on a little bit of horror combined with science fiction, I like Who.
I
just watched Father's Day and the Empty Child.
Now, last Friday's episode, Doctor Who was I liked it. You know what? Because
Sarah Jane?
Oh, it was great seeing her. I like, and then the K-9. I'm gonna get one of those K-9s. Yes, Master. Yeah, and all that stuff. And then that other guy. Now he was on Charmed. He played the headmaster of the school in Charmed.
He
wasn't
was
he?
Buffy. He was
Buffy's
I'm sorry. Professor.
Yes. Yes. I get Buffy and Charmed mixed
Giles.
Up.
Giles, the librarian.
Yeah, he was terrific in that role. He was fantastic, as they say. And Sarah Jane was terrific. It was great. And then I like how she was running around the school and she bumped into the TARDIS and she's like, my God, he's here. You know, and it's a nice scene there. And I liked a little repartee between her and Rose.
And Rose, where you're going to do the same thing to her as you did with me.
Yeah, and does he do the same thing? Does he talk to the TARDIS or something like that? Or wherever they're saying it, does he talk to the TARDIS, you know, and then she says, do you want to be left alone with it or something?
Right.
So it was great.
It was good. For continuity purposes, bringing back an assistant, and she still looks pretty hot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's going to have her own series, Sarah Jane Adventures. It's going to be a kid's show, but...
And you said K-9's getting his own show, too. They're spinning...
Well, K-9's going to have a cartoon, right? Or is it animated or something like that? Something like that with K-9. But Torchwood is looking very good. Another Doctor Who's
Oh, yeah, you're watching the episodes, right?
No, I'm not. But I saw the episode guide, and I read the 13 episodes, and they were pretty good. So.
But it was very good. It was a good episode, and you know, he brought back Sarah Jane, and he finally said goodbye to her. That was a nice scene, and the TARDIS taken off, and the newly regenerated K-9 was there, and everything.
You got to admit one thing, and I know your colleague may not agree with Tennant being a doctor, for him to assume the role of a doctor, and then in addition, for him to play the role of a character that Sarah Jane knew from the 70s,
and
to embrace her and stuff like that, that takes a little bit of acting. I mean, to play a doctor from the 70s, now in the year 2000 something, mm-hmm. and to play him younger than he was, because he played Tom Baker with the scarf mm-hmm. and John Pertwee with the white hair, much older doctors. I think he's excellent. He hugs people. Yeah. He holds Jackie. I mean, he's very nice to Mickey. Not like Eccleston at all, where he was a Time Lord. He was different. He viewed humans as apes. You know, and this one is very, very close.
Yeah, now how about the rumor that Tennant's going to be leaving Doctor Who?
What?
Yeah. Oh, you hear that rumor?
That what?
I heard the rumor that Tennant may not be around after the...
I haven't heard that yet.
Oh, that's the newest rumor. He's not going to...
I haven't heard... That would make it just two seasons for him, right?
Yeah, he'll do the next season with the new girl, and then supposedly, I don't know if they say it could be like a contract dispute.
Is the new girl hot?
Yeah, I think she's attractive. We went into this dispute before because she's dark skin.
I think having her African American is just fine in my
book. I hope so.
I mean, there's very striking.
Is she hot?
Oh yeah, she's beautiful. Yeah, we already saw her, didn't we? No, she's beyond this season, right?
No, she will be on this season, the final two episodes. But that could just be a rumor because Tennant's done a lot of the Big Finish CDs with the Dalek Empire, and he's done that for a number of years. I just find it very strange that he would probably leave after.
Well, Vince Orr is saying the rumor is untrue. And how
And
how about that website?
I told you.
How about that website's going to be pretty much shutting down now? Gallifrey One is going to be closing down pretty much.
It?
Well, there's a message up on their website is that the owner of Sean, whatever his name is,
Sean O'Mac?
No,
Sean Daly?
I wish. Keeping up with the website is going to be too much of a burden to him, so only periodically he'll update the Gallifrey One website.
Now Gallifrey One is going to be defunct.
It's going to still operate, but won't be as updated as frequently as it's been.
Well, that's good, because then that'll mean more people will tune into your show.
Absolutely.
To hear Doctor Who, you know?
Which
is the third best show, according to Sean, and Jericho is the first best show, and BST is the second best show. Did everyone get that? So they can post it on Sci-Fi tomorrow?
It's hard to, because they're all each different, you know. Galactica is more of the sci-fi drama, and, you know, Who is more of the, it's sci-fi, but more, drama.
Sean, I think you're just saying Jericho's number one, so you can have that executive producer back.
How about that? Yeah, I could not, I tried for so long to get more, and Mrs. Moore, and all that. And here I go, one little call, and I get the executive producer on from Jericho. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
That is nice.
But it might be that it's just more an American show as opposed to a Canadian show like BSG or Doctor Who, which is a British show.
Well, one big show in Canada, which we don't even have here.
Robin Hood?
No.
No.
Men in Tights?
No.
What show we don't have?
Stargate.
What? No, Stargate. I haven't seen it here.
It's set in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's shot in Vancouver. Da Vinci Code. Inquest.
That's on. I see on WGN sometimes when I'm flipping through the cable.
Da Vinci Code. They made a series out of it.
No. It's Vinci's Inquest. Da Vinci's Inquest. The guy. He's like a Quincy, and what's his name?
But it's been on like for.
Yeah,
I don't know, four or five seasons.
Five seasons, they did a movie.
We haven't even seen it yet.
Yeah, it's set in Vancouver. Danelli Rhodes is on there. You know, the doctor, Dr. Cottle, he's playing, you know, like a chief.
Really? Doc Cottle's in there?
Yeah, it's an excellent series. You got WGN. You're in Chicago. You got WGN.
I got WGN.
Da Vinci's Inquest, it's called.
Okay, do you ever remember Space 1999?
Oh, absolutely.
You do?
Yes.
You actually do. You never liked it, though, did you?
No, I thought, you know what? I think that could be brought back as a...
Oh, yeah. I think so, too.
The only
you
guy,
will hear it here
the moon?
On Sean's show.
Yeah, the only guy I remember...
1999 will be back.
I hope
so. The only guy I remember is...
Koenig. And then... not Burt Lancaster. The other guy. What the hell is his
name? He was
in
the X-Files movie.
Yeah,
Martin Landau.
Yeah, there
Martin
you go.
Martin
there
Landau.
You go.
Koenig
Excellent.
Rules.
You know,
that's where I took from Koenig Rules.
I had...
Hello?
We got you.
We got you.
Yes.
No. I had the game for that. They had a board game for
that. Oh, they had a board game. They
you can find it on
books.
eBay.
I have the original paperback.
I think I had the lunch pail, too. The lunch
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
It was on WGN, re-aired it.
Right,
The moon shattered.
With the big eye and the tentacles.
Yeah,
there you
go.
That was on the lunch bar.
That's right. And the moon shattered, and a piece of the moon where they're on goes hurling through space, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's the entire moon.
Yeah. The entire moon. Yeah.
That goes through space.
Yeah, so I think that should be dusted off and reimagined as
well. What was the premise of that show?
The moon.
The premise was restoring nuclear waste on the moon,
the moon fractures, doesn't it?
Up and it catapults the moon out of its orbit.
Yeah, the moon goes moon goes soaring through space.
Isaac Asimov, one of the great SF writers, said, this is crap. The science premise here is pure crap. Yeah. And I figure, screw him. what do they want here? Realistic drama like Battlestar,
Actually, and Vince were saying that Da Vinci's Inquest ran for 7 seasons. And then they spun it off into Vinci City Hall for 1 season, and then it was canceled. I did read that they're making a movie out of that up in Canada. Da Vinci's Inquest movie. And what about the Galactica? I thought, I liked it because they're getting, eventually getting off that damn planet. I think that might improve.
They're not only getting off the damn planet, but what I like about it is they're now focusing in on the Cylons a lot more.
Yeah.
Now there's disagreement among them. You begin to see that when they get downloaded, like remember when Dean Stockwell was saying the first time it was didn't feel so bad, but now I've downloaded 3 times and it's like a poker, right, just stabbing me in the head or stabbing me in the eye. So we begin to see that the downloaded process, as they're reborn again and again, it's not as pleasant an experience. Well, they show 6 at the beginning, in the cryo or embryonic tank, gasping for air.
Yeah.
So it's cool that they're going into some of the emotions that the Cylons are experiencing that you didn't see in earlier seasons. I think they focused way too much on the human, and they did, and not nearly enough, on the Cylons. And now what they're doing is what they did with V, and I hate to say compare this to V, but one of the interesting things about V, the series, remember with the lizards?
Yes.
That came to Earth. One of the interesting things was the politics that was going on, the mothership between Diana and John and Lydia. And that was fascinating to watch, the plot between the lizards and the cutthroat type of politics that were going. So I think Ron Moore has lifted a little bit from V, the series. And that's what drew me, I think, to V. And that's what's drawing me to Battlestar, too.
It was a good episode.
Lucy Lawless is dreaming.
Yeah.
Now, he has dreams about Isis or Hera. I mean, she sees her alive, so that means that Cylons have these visions, that they have dreams. I mean, it's cool.
And then
all of that happening.
And she went to the new priestess on the show, that woman with
Amanda Plummer.
Yeah.
Amanda Plummer shows up on Battlestar. That was pretty good.
She did a good job now. Is she signed for, she can be on fairly often now?
I think
she
was just signed on for the one episode, I think,
Because what's her name died, last season. What's her name? The priestess who was with
Alosha. But a death is coming up, in 304.
So next week somebody's going to die in the series.
Major character, but really,
not really.
We already revealed that, right?
Yeah, and I you know what? What was with when Lucy Lawless's character mentioned to Sharon that your baby's alive,
right?
And she refused. She said Adama wouldn't lie to me. Now it wasn't really made clear if Adama was in on that thing with the baby with Laura, because and you look back on those scenes, Rosalind was the only one that was involved in that. It seems like Adama wasn't even in those scenes. We don't even know.
I have a feeling Adama knew what was going on, because Doc Cotto knew, Rosalind knew. So my guess is Adama sort of knows too what's going on.
Actually, and Vince was saying, I like this week's Galactica a lot. Same with me. The opener was just so dark and it was hard to watch. That was me. It was so dark, and the suicide bombings and all this.
Right.
I was like, my God.
It's steering away now from the terrorists and the parallels with contemporary society. And once it moves away from that and develops its own show, it's like the downloaded episode, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot more of those episodes with the Cylon point of view.
Yeah, and then
in the future,
Adama said goodbye to Lee and all that, and
but you heard the 2 Battlestars are coming, so even though the Pegasus is supposed to be taking off to Earth, it seems like both Battlestars are going to be retrieving the Capricorns. And you know, one of the Battlestars sort of gets
up.
It, right?
Well, and because he said, you see in the previews for next week, it goes, damn you, Lee. It looks like he messes up his Adama's plan or something because and he says jump and everything. So it's like Lee comes back at the wrong time and screws
up. Get ready for the Pegasus.
Wow.
You know what happens.
And then
ready for Ty's wife to you know what happens, you know? And you heard it here first.
Absolutely, we heard it months ago.
You know?
And then Helos tells Adama that Sharon's gotten the switches over, he slams his fist on the table. What was that meaning? Was he happy, or was it? It's like he was mad.
I think he was just this is now the time to retrieve my people.
Cause
I saw it again on Monday night, and I really enjoyed it the second time around too. In terms of that whole thing with backtracking in time, so that they save the people from termination from the Centurions. I like all the plan that they had with Chief Tyro. In fact, he's a major character, isn't he?
Oh yes, he's really.
I mean, he really is. The Chief is a central character in this series. He should be one of the top six or top seven characters.
Yeah, you would think. But with Galactica, of course they have the main cast, but you really can't tell the difference because it seems like, the lines are evenly split out. You know, I think Ty's been the star of the series so far.
Yeah,
this season.
I like what they've done with Ty. They've made him almost impotent when he was an alcoholic, and now he's really come into his own. He's a fighter, he's a survivor. In fact, he comes across as strong as Adama does.
Oh,
he really does. So
it's gonna be interesting to see what happens when he gets back up to the Galactic Guard.
I hope they don't diminish his role all that much, and I hope they don't have him going back to the bottle because it looks like he is really a competent and strong leader, and he'd make a great second in command.
Oh yeah, especially when he tells Laura, we've got to keep doing. You got to distract these Cylons, and before the Galactica comes and everything else, so you have to do this stuff.
Yep.
It's good, but now because when they all go back up to the ship,
For Bautar,
he
goes on the Cylon base star.
Now, because Hilo is Adama's, he's like the new Gaeta. And now, when they all go back up, it's going to be interesting to see what roles they all take. Because if Gaeta goes back up to the ship, what's he going to do? What's Adama going to do with Hilo?
That's right. And what about Dee? What about Lee?
Lee, because Pegasus
is commander of the Pegasus, is he going to be a CAG again?
Yeah, Pegasus is destroyed.
That's right.
And then will Lee come to the Galactica as Colonel Lee or a commander? What's going to happen?
Colonel Sanders.
He looks like he's been going to Colonel Sanders a little too much in the off season with the fat suit. But I hope they don't. They go back to the ship and also they send Ty off on some retirement freighter or something. You know what I'm saying?
But they might extend those scenes aboard the ship because what I think will happen is they're going to have two storylines unfolding as they're adapting on the Galactica. They're going to be focusing on the Cylons on the base star, and so we're going to have two threads going throughout these weeks now, which ought to be, I think, really interesting because this is the season where we learn more about the Cylons, the quote unquote enemy, and probably what we'll find out is they're a lot like us.
Yeah, and I like how the imaginary six has come back too—the one in his head.
Yeah,
and Baltar's head. That's she's come back now.
Yeah.
But then there's another one that's real life. That's
Caprica six.
No, the Caprica. No, well, there's a new Caprica six, and she's sleeping with him again, right?
Right.
Yeah. So she, I don't know, because she has the feelings towards him as the other one did. They got shot, right? So now Inventor is saying that Lee's going to die.
Lee is going to die? That's not what I heard.
I don't think so.
That's not the major character that's going to die this season.
Yeah.
Oops, revealed. Ooh.
No way they're going to be putting Jamie Bamber in that fat suit all year. No, they said he's going to be whipped back into shape by the midseason, right?
Yeah. I haven't heard that Lee's going to die at all.
Yeah.
I mean...
Uh-oh. Of course, Starbuck had those scenes with the child, the baby,
right.
The girl.
That child isn't hers.
No.
Because if you see how Hera is growing up, Hera looks like she's 1 year age. This kid's like 5 or 6.
Yeah, and then she holds Leoben's hand at the end of the episode, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting.
Apparently, I was seeing some things on the sites that she is reunited with her true parents.
Oh, interesting.
In this next episode. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Interesting. And I like how they... Callie got away, and that whole beginning scene with the shooting and everything, Rosalind kind of saves Tom Zarek's life.
And he makes some remark, well, I haven't been pushed down by a woman in a long time or something like that. Didn't know how much fun it was. It's like they formed a new type of friendship, too.
Yeah.
My guess is Laura's going to eventually be reinstated as president, especially if Bautar's abducted and taken to the base ship, then it's going to be like the Galactica will be without a president. So my guess is probably she'll be reinstated as the new president.
Really?
Who knows? Maybe Tom Zarek will be her right-hand
person. Well, isn't Zarek already the vice president when he take over for Bautar? See what they do.
People are being very secretive in terms of just how much a role Hatch is going to play in this season.
Yeah.
I mean, I was hearing last season, he's going to be in at least 10 of the episodes and things like that, and it sounded like he was going to have a major, major, major role. And what about this season where he's vice president?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and then I like how she looks up and Tyrell's standing there with his beard shaved. They're all getting ready to go back up to the ship because they're all they're shaving their beards. Even Ty's beard is thinner now and everything. And he says, the Admiral Dom is on his way. And she kind of looks up at the sky. I also hear the drums,
From a psychological perspective, this is really interesting because both Adama and now Ty have suffered injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Adama was shot twice by Boomer, and he's got the cut chest. And now Ty's been tortured by the Cylons, and they gouged out his eye. So it's really interesting that the male military leaders are all physically changed. Now, I'm not sure with Lee what might happen, but it would
maybe they'll castrate him, huh?
I don't know. Maybe he'll lose his fat, right? But it is interesting that the males, at least two of them now, Adama and Ty, both have suffered physical injuries.
Starbuck, don't forget Starbuck in her knee the first season, remember?
And they're taking one of her ovaries.
Suffered some injuries.
Yep.
So and then Callie got the hell beat out of her by Tyrell. Remember that?
He
beat the hell out of her.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And that still hasn't yet been satisfactorily explained, I'm thinking that Dean Stockwell, who played the Cylon,
played a role in that.
He was getting into Tyrell's head.
Yeah.
I think they've got some mental powers that they can exercise over.
Now, last week they ran some previews, and they show Adama bleeding again. Now, what's that from? Do you know anything about that? They show him like bleeding again, like Commander Adama, or Admiral Adama.
I don't know.
I was thinking maybe Sharon finds out that what they did with the baby, and all hell breaks loose when she finds out.
Maybe. But I'm thinking that's going to be a slow... both Hilo and Sharon will find out about the baby, but I think that's going to be one of those threads that's going to be running.
And maybe they'll take off and join Bautar with the Cylons then, with the baby, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Mm. Maybe. Mm. Yeah, maybe. So. We'll have to see, right?
Yeah. Well, Koenig, we'll let you go.
Okay.
We have Dr. Net Ranger waiting in the wings. It's his birthday, so we wish him a happy birthday.
How old is he?
I think he turns 40.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, to be 40 again.
You're only 21.
How old are you, Sean?
I'm 40 as well.
Oh, you are?
Absolutely.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Okay.
All right, Matt Professor, we'll talk to you next week.
Yes.
All right, have a good night. Thank you.
You too.
Welcome. And here he goes, off into the TARDIS, Dr. Koenig Rules, the Matt Professor. And we'll be joined in a moment by Dr. Net Ranger for our pop culture program. We reshuffled the deck a little bit tonight for kid. Of course, Carol Barbion from Jericho had all the shows printed out. I was hoping to get more into each episode. But then for Net Ranger, he said it would work out better for him if he came on second. So And so we'll see. Yes, they did. When they get off that planet, I think the show, last week's episode was much better. I think as they get off that planet, they'll be the show will improve steadily. So, yeah, the planet stuff is all right, but it's just like, oh, please get off that planet already. It's like every season or some planet causes some trouble. If I was running that, I was Adama, I'd stay away from every damn planet I run into until you get to Earth. And every planet they've come across, there's always trouble. Cobol was trouble. That thing with the water, that was trouble. Remember that with the prison ship and all that? That really was the trouble, but the aggravating over that. And then the Cobol was an issue. Now this new Caprica was a problem. So, Admiral Dom, if you're listening, stay away from the planets. You know what I'm saying? Until you get to Earth. So, but, we'll see what happens with that. And see, any other news? I was thinking of mentioning, of course, you had Wesley Snipes, again, was charged with evading his taxes. It was like $12 million. So how the hell can you be a successful actor and hope to hide your tax liability to the IRS in a tomb of $12 million. Are you out of your minds? You know what I'm saying? He's made enough money. Why come he didn't pay your taxes? I mean, he had all those movies, the Blade movies, and then U.S. Marshals and all that stuff. Pay your taxes, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And, Rookwoods is saying that episode 10, they're finding another planet. Oh, that's why I said they got stay away from these damn planets. Every planet they run into is trouble. So I think Dr. Net Ranger is on the line. Here he comes. And Dr. Net Ranger, are you there, sir?
Yes, Sean. How you doing?
Hi, welcome back. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, you turned 40, right?
Yeah, the big 40.
I turned that in May, so join the club here.
All right.
Yeah, so, and thank you for coming on. I know we shuffled the deck a little bit, but it worked out good for you this week, right?
It did. You know, I have to tell you, that was a great interview you did. That was actually one of the most interesting things I've heard for a really long time.
And really?
You did a really outstanding job with that.
Well, thank you.
I think, you actually knew more about the show than she did, I think.
I think I took her off guard with. I think there's two executive producers. I think she must write for certain characters, and I may have taken her off guard with my knowing so much about the series.
And you hit some of her favorites, and I think it's always a lot of fun when you get somebody interviewing you that knows a lot about what you're doing. So
Now, do you have the ratings for Galactica from last week?
No, I have not seen those.
Neither have I. I'm just wondering how they're doing. Nobody seems to have the rating. Even Koenig didn't have the rating, so
yeah.
I don't know. Rookwood is saying that they're apparently going to find the algae planet. What is this? Galactica's going to... I said Galactica's got to stay away from these planets. Every planet they come across has been trouble. Cobol and now Caprica. the big... you want to talk about Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah, that was a... There's an interesting story on the set of Grey's Anatomy last week. It's kind of sounds like elementary school. You've got the number one, pretty much unchallenged number one show. It's beating CSI.
Hmm.
I guess the last three out of four, it's one in the ratings. But the two stars, Patrick Dempsey and Isaiah Washington, apparently got into a fist fight on the show during filming.
Really?
Like right in the middle of it. I guess Isaiah Washington, he's a... Burke, the black doctor, the really good surgeon that got shot last year, he was having trouble with, or he was upset that they weren't filming a scene that he had rehearsed and thought they should be filming, and started taking out on T.R. Knight, the young guy on the show, the young doctor, and Patrick Dempsey, I guess, stepped into the middle of it, and it actually got physical. And Isaiah Washington, I guess, actually grabbed Patrick Dempsey by the throat and threw him up against the wall
before
they broke it up. So you've got the number one show, these two multi-million... just really rich guys, really popular guys fighting it out like school kids. So they both got called into the office. Shonda Rhimes, the executive producer, brought him in and put an end to it, I guess.
Well, that's good because it's a successful series. You hate to see things go wrong and end up hurting the show itself.
Right, or one of them demanding that the other one go, something like that.
Now, how about Lost? Now, Lost is doing well, but the ratings are slipping a little bit, huh?
Yeah, now that's actually another really interesting story from the last week. The ratings are slipping. I mean, we're still talking, the high 16 millions, which is very, very good. But, Lost was in the 20s last year. And we've got this thing coming up with Lost. They're going to do seven new shows, and then go on hiatus for 3 months. And ABC is going to introduce a new series, Daybreak. It's going to be a limited-run series for that 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking that, okay, well, you know, we can do this with Lost. Lost is such a big show, you know, it can survive this time off. But last week it came in just 200,000 over Criminal Minds, the CBS, one of those FBI crime drama shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, well, because that's on after Jericho, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on up against Lost after, right after Jericho.
Well,
so it might be Jericho adding into, you know, to the lead into Criminal Minds.
That could be.
Around.
I got to admit, I watched Criminal Minds too right after Jericho, so that could be it. I mean, it's a good show. I mean, I like Criminal Minds. It's an excellent program.
Yeah, but that's really got ABC kind of in a fluster. You know, they weren't expecting that at all, and. Not only Lost dropping, but this other show coming up and actually being a competitor in that time slot.
Yeah. And now we also want to talk about the Nielsen ratings. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, Con almost stole my show there in that earlier segment when he was talking about the Nielsen ratings. But that's something we've been talking about the Nielsen ratings quite a bit over the last few weeks. And it's something that I think was some of the comments Koenig was making about the DVRs and how they counted into it that got us really looking at them. And I personally didn't really understand how the system worked before, and it's actually, just as we're getting more and more into it, there's a lot of things that really make you wonder about how they're doing the system. First off, the Nielsen ratings are actually part of a Dutch conglomerate company. It was sold to the Dutch in 2000. So it's not a U.S. company that's doing the ratings for U.S. I mean, it could be a Dutch conspiracy here to make us watch crappy TV or something.
Yeah, and then go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the way it works is they have 5,000 viewers, essentially a little over 5,000 Nielsen viewers, that they're extrapolating that to account for the rating or for the viewing habits of about 110 million households that have TVs. So they're taking this very small sample and extrapolating that up, which, you know, politics and things like that, when you have a blind sample or, you know, statistics, when you have a blind random sample, you can do that. But the problem with the Nielsen ratings is the Nielsen viewers know that they're Nielsen viewers. So that's introducing, there's a lot of people saying that really introduces a perturbation that doesn't really make it a fair case to throw the ratings around like they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like you said, Galactica, I'm sure, is watched by more people than the ratings are reflecting, and, you know, but still they do like a 1.8, 1.2, whatever that is. You know, it's good for cable, but it's horrible for the networks, you know?
Right. You know, those numbers, like the 1.8, that's only about 200 people. That's another thing that's really kind of fascinating. You know, everybody's up in the brouhaha over Lost and Criminal Minds, but if you look at the number of Nielsen viewers that they're actually talking about, that's only 10 viewers.
Mm.
You know, only 10 people more watched Lost than watched Criminal Minds.
Mm.
So these numbers, you know, a really, really popular show that's a little over 1,000 viewers watching that show.
Yeah, that's weird. And then now the DVRs, they're counting that into the ratings, right, the DVRs?
Yeah, the ratings that come out overnight, like the ones that we've been quoting on this show, and that's most of the internet websites quote, they do count a random sampling of DVRs are counted in with that, the 5,000 other users that are in there.
Hmm.
So, but they only count DVR playback the same day of the show. So if you watch it, you know, if you record a show at 8 o'clock tonight and watch it at midnight or 11 o'clock, I guess that still counts. But if you watch it tomorrow, that doesn't count in the overnights.
Amazing.
And the thought there is that if you're watching it on DVR, you're fast forwarding through the commercial, so you don't really count as a rating.
Now, what about the CW? They've been kind of floundering since the merger, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of improvement there. And they're actually having a little bit of growth in the key demographic. They're trying to pick up the 18 to 38 viewership, and they're actually doing a little better there. Still not quite as good as they were doing, as the WB was doing. But overall, they're having trouble breaking 3 million on the shows that they're talking about being their hits. That's another thing about the ratings. You see a show on the CW doing 3 million. It's a great night for the CW, and show over on ABC or NBC doing 8 million, you know, terrible, terrible performance.
Amazing, huh? And then, now on Smallville now, Green Arrow showed up, right? Oliver Queen?
Right, that's finally happened. He's actually been on two episodes now, the the Oliver Queen Green Arrow character from the comics. He's basically come to town looking for other superpowered individuals to start the Justice League.
Mm.
And they've had Flash on before, and they had one of the Teen Titan characters, the Cyborg. Mm. So kind of continuing that theme. No Batman yet. But actually, the Oliver Queen character, though, is kind of early on in the show, they were talking about having Batman, you know, the young billionaire Bruce Wayne coming to town, and having been a friend of Lex's from boarding school. And they've kind of switched that over now. That's really what the Green Arrow character is on the show. He went to some really rich, exclusive boarding school with Lex, and they apparently have a history.
Hmm.
And again, the guy playing that character is Justin Hartley, who was supposed to play Aquaman if that pilot had gotten picked up.
Yeah, and then they dropped it and said, brought him out as Oliver Queen then, right?
Right.
And then now he also says Ellen on Supernatural. She's also from the 4400, right?
Right. Samantha Ferris is the actress. She plays Nina Jarvis. She took over as the leader of the main group there after Peter Coyote's character left. So that was kind of interesting to see that. I hadn't heard that she was going to be on there, but I guess she's going to have a recurring role throughout the season.
Wow.
On that show,
who is she playing? Is she playing the same role or somebody different?
No, it's she's kind of an older adult. Hunter of these like evil spirits, kind of like the kid's father. The two boys on the show, their father was played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and he died in the first episode. So she's kind of filling that role as the older mentor.
Hmm.
It was kind of neat to see that crossover.
Yeah, it would have been nice if she was playing the same character. It'd be kind of cool, a little linkage to the 4400. But yeah, I guess they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
wait a minute now. Sure. Who owns that show? 4400 is owned by Paramount. Oh, they couldn't because. Well, I don't know. I mean, is Supernatural a Warner Brothers show or
the
Paramount?
Yeah, Warner Brothers.
Oh, so they couldn't
but
do
it. They're both filmed in Vancouver, so you see a lot of crossover kind of in the off-season. You know, she's off from 4400 right now, so she's kind of branching out and doing this other show.
Huh. And then I saw the Oliver Stone. He said he's going to go on the hunt for Bin Laden.
Yeah, another conspiracy movie from Oliver Stone. Big surprise there. But starting to get a lot of buzz. So.
And Mel Gibson, he stuck his foot in his mouth on Good Morning America, right? And
yeah, that was another, didn't really apologize.
No.
In fact, I think kind of said some people should apologize to him. So
yeah.
We're looking, I think you can kind of see a lot of people pulling away from his other big movie coming up, Apocalypto. It's the historical drama. I think it's either the Aztecs or the Mayans. I'm not sure what the story is, but you know, a lot of people distancing themselves from him. So
yeah.
I think that'll continue.
And then, of course, you have Jericho is picked up.
Right, Jericho is the second show of the season of the new shows to get a full season pickup. Heroes last week, and now Jericho. So
yeah, it was a good episode. I want to rehash. I rehash a lot of it with Carol Barbie. But
right.
you know, Hawkins knew the dying guy and everything else, and she says don't miss tomorrow night's episode of Jericho, which is Wednesday on CBS, 8 o'clock Pacific time. What time is it? And is it air in Denver?
It's at 7 o'clock.
Oh, 7 o'clock. Okay, and everybody said Heroes. Heroes was outstanding on Monday, huh?
Oh yeah, another great episode there. Actually, the characters are starting to actually meet each other and get together, kind of in really subtle ways right now. But you had two or three scenes with them kind of crossing over, and then the final scene of the show, you had I guess future Hero, the Hero, the Japanese character, comes from the future, and now he's dressed really cool. He's got a little goatee. Lots of glasses and speaking perfect English.
Yeah, and then Milo's character, his eyes are, something's wrong with his eyes, huh?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think what that was showing was, are you talking about the scenes from next week? Or?
Well, no, well, at the end of the Monday's episode, he talks to Milo, whatever his name is, his character, and aren't his eyes like white or something, Milo's eyes?
I thought that was on the scenes from next week.
Oh, maybe it's next week. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, Milo's character takes on the power of any other hero that's around, basically. And Isaac or Isak, as the hero calls him, the guy that paints the future, when he's in that like heroin-induced daze painting the future, his eyes get like that. They had that scene earlier in the episode. So I assume that was just Milo was probably hooking up with him, kind of taking on that. But I could be wrong about that.
Maybe. And then also, Meeting Boulevard Magazine, the creator is going to be in the magazine, correct?
Yeah, we actually have that article came out yesterday, so just kind of another talk to Tim Kring, the guy that came up with the concept. And had a few new things to say that I hadn't seen elsewhere, so that's actually in the magazine today, or yesterday, actually appeared in there.
Hmm. And
yeah, then Heroes ended with kind of that that voiceover from next week, I guess, also. Save the cheerleader. Save the world.
Yeah. What's that? And they're all going to meet up in Vegas, aren't they?
Yeah.
I don't see it. I'll bump into them at the hotel this week. I don't think so, huh?
I'm going to have a roll over there, and I'll head over and see you in the background.
Yeah, I'll be waving at him. Caesar's pal. I'll hold up my Jericho sign. Welcome to Jericho. No. But it's a good series. I like where they're going. Now, have they really established that Jack Coleman's the villain now on the show?
Yeah, I think it's clear. Well, you know, you never know. There could be more behind what he's doing. I mean, mm-hmm. They might just be leading you to think he is, but he's the adoptive father of the one and seems to be interacting with all of the others.
Absolutely.
He's got the other one that follows him around, who apparently damps out the other hero's powers. Mm-hmm. So that should be interesting.
Yeah. Now, we saw Milo's character kissing, under the umbrella last week.
Right.
So they're going somewhere with that romance, right?
Yeah.
So it's a good series.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it. Just from week to week, it seems to be... it's kind of really growing on me. I think Jericho is still probably the best of, that category of new shows. But I'm liking Heroes a lot.
Yeah.
And actually, both Heroes and Jericho are pretty much maintaining their ratings from week to week. Heroes had a slight drop this week, but nothing significant.
Well, see, Heroes benefits from the repeat. How many times they rerun that show? But of course, it's on Friday on Sci-Fi. Yeah, but
right.
Jericho doesn't have the benefit. I wonder, because they own the CW, and they also own Spike TV. Can't they put Jericho, rerun the current week's episode of Jericho on CW or on Spike?
Well, there might be a hole in the CW
for
what they're talking about with Runaway. I mean, it is. It's another one again. Yeah, that's the one new show that they have on the combined CW from both networks. The only new show they brought on, and it's just continuing to drop, and it's like 1.5 million at this point. So, that is not even for one of the big five, which CW I guess arguably still is, even though they're doing badly. That's just really bad even for them.
Yeah. Now about Friday Night Lights. I mean, what's with the ratings for that show? They're floundering.
Yeah, the show opened up at 7.2 million and dropped about 800,000 last week, so definitely floundered. And that's when you'd kind of expect to see, start seeing cancellation talk or notices about that. But instead of doing that, let me kind of back up here. It was on September 30th, Bob Wright, the CEO of all of NBC Universal, was at a press conference talking about Kidnapped. And the numbers between Friday Night Lights and Kidnapped are actually very similar right now from first and second episode, what they did. Friday Night Lights was just on tonight, so we haven't seen that. But Wright was talking about Kidnapped, what a disappointment that show was for us. People just didn't understand the concept. And then, 2 days later, they told them to stop production after the 13th episode, and they're going to burn off the remainder of the shows on the Saturday Night Graveyard.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights... basically the same ratings. Thursday, Kevin Riley, who I believe he's president of NBC Entertainment, comes out and says, we had really modest expectations in this time slot, and the show's doing really well, and we're going to stand behind it. And then they go and they order two more episodes.
Maybe.
And I've never heard of a two-episode order. They have the 13 original, but they've now ordered two more, so...
Well, maybe they're hoping. I imagine it does pretty well in the. Do you have any of the demos? The younger demo, the 18 to 49, it probably does well at that. And then, a lot of the chicks probably like it because what's his name? And I said, if the only chance to get ratings, better have him start running around that set in the G string then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, him or have you guessed on
No. that's a way of killing the show. They'll cancel it after I'm on there.
Well, another thing that happened last week, though, for Friday Night Lights, it was kind of unusual, just the amount of positive press it's getting and where it's coming from. Last week on Friday, there were two events that happened. There's the View, the talk show in the mornings on ABC. Rosie O'Donnell just recently joined the group there, and she starts talking about the show and telling people how great it is and that they should watch it. And then Senator, is it?
Cornyn?
Connor? Or Cornyn? The senator from Texas,
Cornyn?
Yeah, Cornyn. Yeah, the one that they were talking about possibly being on the Supreme Court after after that woman fell through from Texas.
But
anyway, he's one of the most conservative. You know, he's the one that has the comments about comparing gay marriage to box turtles. Is it okay to marry a box turtle? You know, just some really radical right-wing stuff. And he comes out and writes an article about how great this show is. Now, he's a senator from Texas, and the show is filmed in Texas.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, they want to keep the money there and everything. I'm sure it brings in a lot of money to in the city that's filmed in, you know.
Right, but still, he and Rosie, you know, two radically diametrically opposing forces or whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, well, somebody else, I saw something somewhere else which says maybe the name of the show is a problem. Maybe they should change the name of it, because Friday Night Lights, people don't know what that is. You know, I think it's like, you know, looking up at the stars, or lights, you know, changing the light bulbs or something. Maybe maybe by changing the name of it to something else, huh?
Yeah, they're actually talking about moving it, moving the night again. And NBC has a new game show that they just launched, I guess, last Friday.
Oh, yeah, 1 versus 100?
Yeah.
Where would they, well, would they move Friday Night Lights to Friday night?
Well, they're talking about that. They're definitely talking about moving the game show into a Tuesday night slot, though.
Oh, really?
And another thing just to watch for with Friday Night Lights, the campaigns have started as of,
to save
I guess, today. Well, they aren't really saying save it yet, but there's a kind of a fan campaign going on. They're trying to get just interest and attention to the show. Mm. And they're doing something kind of cool there. There was talk about sending, you know, what can we send to the directors or whatever, but instead of that, they're actually making donations to United Cerebral Palsy.
Oh, really?
And kind of keeping track of this, you know, saying, you know, we're fans, we're donating money to this cause because we like this show. And, you know, the main character is paralyzed. He's a football player that got paralyzed, and so that's kind of the right charity for it. But we'll see if that gets some attention. It's kind of a, you know, another neat concept coming out.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, they can move it. I mean, I don't know where they can move it to. Move it over to the USA Network. The NBC Universal owns that.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility. I haven't heard anybody from NBC talking about that yet, but they definitely own the USA Network, and they've shown repeats over there. So that, you know, 6 or 7 million viewers on USA would be great.
Be huge. Yeah. And then what about Studio 60? Like I said, that show. I can't believe that show is still on, huh?
Now, you know, I'm almost ready to make a prediction that gets canceled before Friday Night Lights does.
Wow.
It fell last night to 7.6 million. Now, all of the buzz about how horrible Friday Night Lights was when it got 7.2 million. So here you've got the big, supposed to be the savior of the network show coming in, and has fallen again in every single 30-minute time slot that this one-hour show has aired. It's lost viewers. So down to 7.6 million now, so...
Yeah, it's between Matthew Perry and the other one, it just kills it for me right there. And then 6 Degrees, that's flopping, right?
Yeah, both 6 Degrees and the 9 are actually starting to get talk about that they probably aren't going to make it through a full season. And pretty much every network has two shows that they pick up the, you know, 5 or 6 whatever they pick up for the season, but they have two that they maintain in production and then they kind of bring out in the mid season to replace whatever's on. That's how Grey's Anatomy started, if you remember. I don't know if you watched that.
Yeah, and then we've got a couple minutes left. The movie Brothers and Sisters was picked up for a full season, so that's going to stick around.
Right.
Right.
And I don't think that's a definite yet, but they're saying that that's going to happen. That's pretty much, if it hasn't been announced yet, it's going to be announced in
pretty soon.
A day or so that it's going to get the full season.
Yeah, and you got the movies. Grudge 2 did real well, about 21 million.
Yeah, Grudge 2, The Man of the Year, the Robin Williams comedian running for president, did fairly well, 12 million.
Yeah.
Pretty far down.
Well, yeah, but this time of the year, though, it probably did real well.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we've got three big ones opening this weekend, Flags of Our Fathers, which is kind of the patriotic, the Marines at Iwo Jima that raised the flag, kind of following them. There's one that's getting a lot of buzz that I just can't imagine will do very well, but basically a young girl and a wild horse.
Oh, yeah, I saw that too. That might be, I'd probably do better in DVD than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marie...
Another one that looks interesting is called The Prestige.
Oh.
It's Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, and they're magicians. It's set, I think, in the 1800s or early 1900s, and these two magicians who are basically competing with each other. And you know, the concept, when I say it like that, doesn't sound very good, but the scenes and the previews and everything look like it's going to be a really great movie.
Yeah, and you got interviews with them in the Media Boulevard magazine, correct?
Yeah, so that's going to appear. I think that appears on Friday in the magazine with the two leads. So.
Interesting. And then Ello Raptor's asking about Heroes. We just went over Heroes at length, didn't we?
Yeah. Heroes is basically the saving grace for NBC this year. So it's they're very happy with Heroes, and it's going to be around for the full season.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be around for a while, and, the airings on Friday certainly aren't hurting the show, starting off the Sci-Fi Friday, right, and before Who and Galactica, so it makes, it's smart. I mean, they're re-airing, you miss it, you go to watch on Sci-Fi on Friday, and then hopefully sit through the rest of the Friday night lineup there, with Who and Battlestar.
Right.
Yeah, and then the same thing. I just wish they put Jericho on one of the cable networks on a different night to help people get caught up.
Yeah. You know the thing though, I think they must distort the ratings because the Sci-Fi Channel doesn't really give out the ratings, or not in any convenient way to find.
I mean,
how many new viewers are they getting on Heroes?
Yeah, we don't know.
And I don't know if they track that.
No. So well, Dr. Neringer, I'll let you go at the end of the program.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Good.
Thank you very much. And it was Dr. Net Ranger from MediaBoulevard.com as well as Media Boulevard Magazine. We urge you to go to the message board and post your messages there for and check out the Media Boulevard magazine. What'd you want?
Yeah, just
what'd
a note. I found the top 10, but for some reason sites won't list more than the top 10 cable ratings.
Yeah.
And the lowest one is 2.7, so Battlestar can't be far from there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why Sci-Fi. I remember the first season I used to have to get the ratings all the time, and now they just don't give them out. So you think you'd be able to get them because, it's not Sci-Fi. Nielsen has them, but I looked on the Futon Critic.